It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 670. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message on Skype. The name is Mike Tech Show, all one word. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow, and also facebook.com/miketechshow. The show is brought to you by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow for your free 15-day trial, and you can go directly to Instant House Call at instanthousecall.com. I have a jam-packed show again. I have two articles. I'm going to talk about the Windows 10 1809 update, and one that you may not know that you got to be aware of. And then I have a funny Mac install of a program, something that I ran into. Then a problem with forwarding email from Verizon's Yahoo email. Very interesting. Learned this the other day with a client. And then a stack of email. I have a voicemail I'm going to play. And we're going to talk about alternatives to Evernote in case Evernote bites the dust. And then a few other follow-up emails. So got a lot to cover. Let's start with the Windows 10 1809. When you are doing a disk cleanup, you have to pay attention to something. Everybody normally just checks everything. You can't do that anymore for files to delete. They have added the downloads directory. Microsoft very quietly added downloads. Now, it's unchecked by default. But if you know people when you go in that automatically check all of those boxes, you will delete your downloads directory. And I don't know about you, but I don't want my downloads directory deleted. And I know a lot of clients and a lot of people that don't want that deleted. Beware of them quietly adding that. And that's the first link. Next, the horrible update that they blame data loss. And it's true. The update is re-released. The data loss is blamed on misdirected folders. So anybody that's dealing with redirected folders, they have a problem where Microsoft, the update, doesn't know how to handle that, and it is deleting them. If you have a client or yourself that you've ran into this issue, Microsoft's offering free support where they will help you. They'll use tools to undelete the files because they're technically there, and if you didn't overwrite them and you didn't work. But how many people realize that they're all gone? I mean, you know, if you take a few minutes, you could actually damage when you delete a file. It's still technically there. And if you know it right away, you have a pretty good shot at undeleting it and using like recursive or one of the other tools. But Microsoft, in their infinite wisdom, decided they had a problem in handling redirected folders. And right now, I knock wood, I don't have any clients that hit this issue. So if you did, I would be very interested in that story. If you take a moment and can send me an email or record a voicemail and send it to me, I'd be very, very curious of what's happening. And did you work with Microsoft to help them undelete the files? Did you have a good backup to be able to recover? This is the backup lesson. Before any kind of an update like that, you got to secure your data. You have to have a good backup. And you are playing with fire now. Look at this big problem with Microsoft releasing an update, deleting files by mistake. You have to protect your data. You have to protect your client's data. You must have a good, reliable backup before you dare attempt a major feature update like this. Anyway, the article goes into what the problems are. Now, here's a quick little story. I am remoted into a client's Mac, and it's a brand new iMac. As a matter of fact, I was on site the day before and kicked off the Time Machine transfer for the new Mac because we made sure we had a great Time Machine backup, and then took that drive. And then upon booting for the first time the new iMac, you have a choice to restore all the programs and data from a Time Machine backup. Now, I didn't want to wait for that because he has 300 gigs of data and programs that are being transferred. That was taking a very long time. So no need for me to be on site. We scheduled time for Wednesday morning that I would connect in. And some of the things I wanted to do was install the latest version of Malwarebytes. Now, when you install Malwarebytes on a Mac, you have to allow it to make changes within the security preferences. The instruction comes up real clear. I go in and I can't click allow. It's driving me crazy. So I reach out to my contacts at Malwarebytes, and a big shout out to Alex, who got back to me and said, "You wouldn't be happy to be doing this remotely. The Mac blocks the ability to change some security settings while you're remoted as a security feature." That's why the allow button didn't work. I exited instant house call, had my client, he was able to click allow, and we were able to get Malwarebytes installed with real-time protection. Now, Malwarebytes will install, but you don't get the real-time protection unless you allow it in the security preferences, security and privacy preferences within system preferences. Little tidbit that if you're ever working remote on a Mac, you need that. I'm on the phone with my client, and then I had him initiate a start session with Instant House Call so I could continue. But I just wanted to share that if you ever run into that. It was very frustrating at the time. I didn't understand. This is a brand new iMac. How can an option not work? But you got to remember when you're remoting, and this happens with certain software installs on Windows, certain programs would not install or work perfectly if you were, say, remote desktop, where Instant House Call puts you at the console. And I've had better success in running a program of Instant House Call than the traditional remote desktop, which is a problem sometimes when you're trying to run software. But keep that in mind. If you're remoting and you're having an issue, you may want to have someone on site install something at the console, and you may have better luck. But it's just something you should be aware of while you're working remotely with clients. Okay, client has Verizon email. He did not get moved to AOL. He got moved to Yahoo with Verizon Mail. So he now has a new email account that I set him up on ShareWeb for Exchange hosted to verify. It's interesting. He wants to now forward all of his email. There's an option, there's instructions, but it doesn't work. He got on with tech support and found the instructions, although available, because he came from Verizon, that option doesn't work even though it's there. There's features that the Verizon email people who moved over to Yahoo, even though they're there, they don't work. This is a reason Verizon got out of the email business. That's why they bought the two worst email services for securing anything, because they're incapable of securing email. You got Yahoo and AOL. My advice has always been, anybody you know, anybody that has an AOL.com, anybody that has a Yahoo.com, you move it. If they don't want to buy their own domain and have their own email, then move it to Gmail. Not that that's going to be perfect forever. We don't know, but it's better than Yahoo and AOL. Anytime I see that, I cringe and I want to move them. And it's just another reason like this where they have a forwarding option, but oh yeah, that doesn't work for you. Just wanted to share that. Oh, and by the way, this is the client that a long time ago I put a strange article. there's a situation with Yahoo that in order to get your password reset, you have to contact the Better Business Bureau. And do you know, my client had to do that, followed those instructions, and they work. But that's ridiculous. I'm going to find that article and post it up again, because my client had the printout that I gave him a few months ago, and he went through this a couple weeks ago to get his Yahoo password. See, the passwords were grandfathered on devices they were already installed. But if you tried to set up pulling his email from a new device, it wouldn't work. And as he tried to change the password, it wouldn't allow him. And as he tried to reset the password, it wouldn't allow him because he did not have a recovery phone number. So there was no other option to contact the company or to go through that process. But there was an individual, and she wrote a great article where she contacted the Better Business Bureau. Yahoo then contacted her. She went through the process and got the password reset. He followed that step by step, and it worked perfectly. When I was with him this week, he was shaking his head. He says, Mike, I can't believe that I had to go through that, and you were spot on in finding that. And that was Ken found that article when I was on site with the client, which is, it's just so ridiculous. But I had to share that because that really does work. I now want to talk about all of your great responses to my call for what are you doing for replacement for Evernote if Evernote bites the dust. This first response is a voicemail from Nancy.
Hey, Mike, I had been using Evernote for a long time, and then I discovered the getting things done methodology, and I tried to use it with that. It didn't work really well. It was pretty cumbersome, but I found another app called Nozbe, N-O-Z-B-E, and it was designed to work in conjunction with the getting things done methodology, but the creators of it have a podcast called The Podcast, and they talk about the way they use Nozbe, and they use it at work, and you can actually... you could make a project for each one of your clients and then have tasks in there that you could assign out to your team. It, as far as I know, is platform independent. I have the desktop app. There's a cloud. You can use it on the web, and I have it on my phone, and I'm pretty sure it is available for Android as well. But it's something that you might want to look into.
Nancy, thank you so much for taking the time. We'll check that out. And of course, all the software that you're hearing about, I will have links to in the show notes. This is from Paul, and he says, it looks like this fits your specs, and it's NoteJoy at notejoy.com. He says, I have not used it as I use Google Keep. So that's another one. Here is from Chris, and it's SciPortal. We just signed up with SciPortal. I've only had it for a couple weeks, so can't really give any feedback on it yet, but thought you should get in on it on your list to review. I did look into quite a few systems before settling on this one. It came recommended via the MSP subreddit. It functions more as a knowledge base for IT companies, but can be customized to suit any layout. There are apps for every platform, and they do offer a host-based version. Worth checking out. It's what we went with, and it's www.siportal.com. This is from Chris. Hi, Mike. Like you, I was a dedicated Evernote user. I didn't use it enough to warrant a premium subscription, but I was considering it during one of the holiday donate X amount of dollars and get premium subscription from A, B, and C sales. I was familiar with OneNote from work since my employer has a Microsoft Enterprise agreement. I thought it was okay, but nothing particularly special and somewhat poorly supported at the time. My biggest use for Evernote was web clipping. At the time, there was nothing like it. When they decided to put limits on the free version, I decided to take a closer look at OneNote for my personal use. The clipping tool provided by Microsoft prior to Office 2013 was, if I remember correctly, a JavaScript bookmark that was incredibly limited. When OneNote 2013 came out, they added a real browser extension with more functionality. Maybe that is why I have not embraced it. That extension over time has improved to the point that I'd say parity has been reached with the Evernote web clipping extension. The general functionality of OneNote has improved to the point that I started to prefer using it over Evernote. The biggest obstacle was how to import my Evernote notes into OneNote. I found a migration tool, actually several, but the last one worked best. I have a link to the migration tools and was able to import everything. That said, I was left with a mess because I had everything in a single note in Evernote. Yeah, that's on me. It sounds like your Evernote is better organized and you should be able to easily duplicate your current structure in OneNote quite easily. Since the exit of Steve Ballmer, Microsoft has really made a big push into mobile apps that integrate with your online services. The one I find most useful on my iPhone is called Office Lens. I use it to scan business cards, receipts, whiteboards, documents, etc. directly into various locations like OneNote and or OneDrive. It corrects the view even if I'm off to the side of the room. The picture of the whiteboard looks like I was standing front dead center. Other integrations with OneNote that I use daily are Microsoft Teams, their Slack competitor, and SharePoint Online. Each team and SharePoint site can have a notebook associated with it. Yes, I worry about living in a Microsoft monoculture, but I haven't found anything besides OneNote that checks all the boxes. Hope this is useful as you explore your options. Excellent review of OneNote and some of the integrations. I really appreciate that. Thank you. That is our collection of Evernote alternatives, and I will keep them coming. I will collect batches and share them, but this is a lot of work that I will go through taking a look at all of these. So I just wanted to get that out there. So if you're in the same situation I am and you're kind of worried about Evernote, what's the alternative? This is a follow-up to my recommendation. This is the user who used Roadkiller and was hoping he was going to get the speed performance. And then I recommended an SSD to help. This is from Greg. You were right about my Optiplex having a spinning drive, but it wasn't quite as bad as the 5400 RPM Western Digital Blue. It's a 7200 RPM Travel Star. Replacing it with an SSD isn't an option since it is company property. I'm not going to get approval for replacing a working drive when the performance is really only a problem for the first 10 minutes or so after startup. I can't believe it's 10 minutes to start up. I was wrong to expect Roadkiller to fix the repeated reinstallation of those Windows 10 apps. The apps finally stayed uninstalled after I let our WSUS server upgrade me from 1703. Unfortunately, the feature upgrade also brought back other MS apps that are useless or downright inappropriate in our workplace. I'm still annoyed that Windows 10 is sluggish for so long after boot when we didn't have this problem with Windows 7 or Linux. Following your suggestions, disabled all the startup programs and improved boot speed a bit without losing any functionality, as far as I could tell. And he followed these articles to improve my boot time a little more. I have a couple more things for you to do. One, in Windows 10, go to Settings, and then there's an Apps. Go to Apps. Go to Apps and Features. In there is a list. Now, you can't uninstall all of them, but you got a lot of Microsoft apps where you can right-click and uninstall them, like the Xbox app. Are you kidding me? In an office environment, get rid of it. There's a lot of little ones you can get rid of, but that's, I don't believe, is causing your slow boot time. There is a program. I want you to be very careful. It's called Auto Runs. Even though you disabled everything through Task Manager that's starting up, Auto Runs could identify other culprits of what's slowing your system down. So I want you to run Auto Runs. Can't hurt. See what's auto starting from registry entries and things that AutoRunz will give you control to check and not start where no other program will. That's a recommendation, Greg. Let me know if that helps. It still bothers me that it's taking that long. Can your company allow you to re-image your system, back up all your data, and see if you could just at least re-image it and maybe doing the latest version from the latest media creation tool from a USB might give you a better situation on boot time, because that's just way, way unacceptable having that long to boot. This is from Austin, and SSD not booting on my laptop. Rather than read this all in detail, I have a solution. I've ran into this, and sometimes it's UEFI or legacy boot after you do a clone or you install from scratch on an SSD, and then the boot, it can't read the drive. I have not got a pattern to this, but go into the BIOS and load the defaults. You know, that helps sometimes. And then you can also try flipping between UEFI and legacy boot and trying to get your Windows 10 SSD to boot. I've had interesting problems we've ran into, and I haven't found a common ground to be able to describe, pick this option at this moment, because we've had the same Optiplexes and systems on different rollouts where we've had the problem and we haven't had the problem. And one time changing it to UEFI fixed it. Another time just loading defaults fixed it. You got to play with the BIOS sometimes in order to get the SSD to boot. And don't worry, your data is not going to go away. So just be careful with your options and just stick with it. And it's, if you had a successful install or a successful clone, you will get it to boot. Final email from the computer doctor. Multiple monitors management software. Hi, Mike. I know in the past you talked about a piece of software that is designed to help a user have great control over multiple monitors, but I don't recall the name of the software. I will put in the show notes. It's called Ultramon. And I haven't used that in a while because for Windows 7, it was ultimate. It was great. But the Windows 10 monitor management was a lot better than Windows 7 for multiple monitors. So I haven't really used this, but it does support Windows 10. And that link's going to be in the show notes. He continues, I have a customer with a Lenovo laptop and a docking station with two monitors. When she disconnects, all icons go to the laptop screen. When she reconnects, the icons stay on the laptop screen instead of moving back to the external displays. Do you know of a utility, paid or free, that can give us better control over multi-monitor arrays? This program does the monitors, but if you want the positions of the icons saved, there is a program, and I think it's Icon Save or Icon Restore. I've talked about this in the past. This is another utility when you're going from multiple monitors to none. I have a client whose workflow is so tied to his icon layout, he can't have an issue where the icons get scrambled or get sorted. So he saves the positions of the icons right before we shut down, and he can restore that if something comes up funky. He could just do one click, restore, and all the positions of the icons. That's a separate program as to the control over the multi-monitor. So you may need both. And I think the icon program is free. Also, I know you've mentioned in the past how you have some customers with needs for more than just two monitors and how AMD has great options with Eyefinity-capable cards. I personally tried a nice AMD Eyefinity card that supports six monitors via mini DisplayPort. I had nothing but trouble. And after lots of research and trying different things, I had to return the card and it just wouldn't work how I wanted. I wanted to have the ability to display to four monitors, but have the computer know they are each an individual monitor with different resolution capabilities, With iFinity, I could only set the system to either set all four displays as one large square or one long line. Or I could do three monitors in a line or stack column, and the fourth was a second monitor. So I found the NVIDIA Quadro 9600 workstation card, not a gaming card, that can handle four displays independently of each other with different resolutions, landscape versus portrait, etc. I have two 24-inch monitors side by side, a 22-inch on a mounted swing arm, and I put my SMS and other communications on it, and finally, an old 32-inch LCD TV that I have up on the wall for occasional remote sessions that I just need to keep an eye on. This card is perfect for my needs. That is awesome, Computer Doctor. Thank you so much. I hope the utilities I mentioned solve some problems for your client. And thank you for the recommendation of the graphics card. A quick note, the next show will not be till Saturday, the 27th of October. Today is October 13th as I record this. I'm going to be away the next two Thursdays. So unless I can put a show together early next week, I'm not counting on it because I'm going to be so busy as I'm trying to finish up everything before I start traveling. And yes, I'm traveling with my broken foot, which is still, you know, slowing me down, but I got to keep moving. Next show, Saturday, October 27th at 2 o'clock. The best way to support the show is to go to miketechshow.com, click on the Amazon link. That link helps support Carrie Holzman and myself. It gives us a commission when you purchase something. So when you click on that link, you go to Amazon, you search for anything that you want to buy. As long as it's within that session where you click the link and you purchase, a small commission comes back, but your price stays the same. This is the best way to help Carrie and myself, and we really appreciate that. Fabs Auto Backup 7 Pro, just incredible. We keep using it all the time and just love it. Check out Instant House Call for all your remote support needs. Great, great remote control software that you can have unattended mode on all the Windows systems. I have that set for all of my retainer clients where I can get in and do work. As a matter of fact, last night was the first Friday after Patch Tuesday. So that means I do server updates with a couple clients. So last night I was up late doing the server updates and then remoting in, making sure everything's fine. And I didn't have to leave the comforts of my home office. And was able to take care of everything last night. That's it. Thank you, everybody, for staying subscribed and downloading the show. I appreciate it. And I will see you back in a couple weeks. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.